And welcome back to Focus. I'm Frederica Layton, and my guest this evening is Joan Stack. Joan is a very well-rounded woman. She is involved in local performing arts, or at least the nonprofit groups that bring us visual arts and entertainment. And she's also had her own radio show. Actually, she probably could teach me a couple of things.
I think it's so much fun to talk, you know, because when you're the interviewer, you're not supposed to talk too much.
Well, you know, now let's just finish up about the community theater. I mean, take for instance, a group such as the Town and Country Players, which you were involved with, you know, years ago. But can you tell us the importance of a community theater to the people in the community? I mean.
Oh, I think, yeah, I think it's great. First of all, it's a lovely creative outlet for many people. And the reason I joined initially was because I moved down from New York City and I didn't know anyone. And I thought, now, where will I meet people?
Mm-hmm.
So that's really why I joined and did meet a lot of people. Many of them, even though that was many years ago, are still my friends. I have not been active in that theater for some time.
But local theaters in general serve a purpose.
Oh, I think it's great too, not only as a vehicle, because people who are talented have to have experience, and they have to be out there and get the feedback of the audience and get confidence and get to learn. And they're not going to get into equity productions, as we discussed, because it's just too tough. And chances are they're not even going to get into productions that are partial equity, because there's so much competition, so that it's not only a good outlet for them, but it's great for the people in the community, because you know what it is? I mean, to go to New York or to Philadelphia to the theater, now you're talking, $45, $50 a ticket, which is, you know, you multiply that by two and pay the babysitter and have something to eat, and you have dropped a bundle, not to even mention the parking, so that people can get to things that are very pleasant and really enjoyable, and they don't have to pay much money, and sometimes they're going to see some of their neighbors who are performing.
Well, so the community theater provides a social outlet, a creative one, and what about for people who don't feel like getting on the stage but want to participate?
Well, sure, exactly. Look at, you know, what I do for Passage Theater as a publicist, that's very often the weakest link in an organization, because you know, they have to get the word out, and people don't know quite how to do it. So anyone who I think can type and get a press release written up, keep the facts straight, would be extremely welcome. So I would encourage people to, now, to go to an equity theater group such as Passage or McCarter or these people, or do the work my daughter does. That requires, you know, more training. But if people want to get their feet wet in any kind of arts organization, there's always a need for people who
Now what kind of personal benefits do you derive from it?
I do. First of all, for me, after all the years on radio, it's like working the other side of the desk, because I got the press releases. I used to have people calling me up wanting to get publicity for their client or their company or whatever it was, so that I knew how to do a press release just from having read so many myself. And I knew, too, that it was very important not to simply write the press release, stick it in the mail, and think the world was going to come to your door. I mean, not these days. You've got to sell everything. So the important thing then would be to follow it up with phone calls and make arrangements and kind of pitch your client, as they say.
Now tell us about your newspaper, Art Matters.
Oh, that's a wonderful newspaper. They're based in Philadelphia, but a lot of the news is of art shows and galleries and artists who live in this area, as well as even down as far as Delaware. It covers that five-county area. A wonderful paper. The editor and publisher is a great woman named Doris Brandes, who is an artist herself but has devoted many years to this newspaper.
Now, what gave you the idea to get involved in that or start it up?
Well, I'll tell you the
president
truth.
And founder?
I'll be really honest, Frederica. A nonprofit board was being formed, and they needed a president. So it wasn't any great talent of mine, I must confess. It was more my friendship, I think, with Doris that did it. But it's been very worthwhile work.
Now, how many years has Art Matters been published?
Goodness. That's it. I'm sorry I don't have that, but I'll say I'll say 10, 11, 12 years, perhaps that long. Yeah, it's fair. It has a good reputation too. The artists, you know, work alone, and it's so hard for them because they need to have contact with each other. They need to talk that language and know what the other people are doing and know what's available for them for shows and what galleries might be interested in mm-hmm. and just what's happening in the
so
art
world.
So that's
more for the visual arts versus the performing arts.
Yes, that is totally visual arts, and they do not even do film. It's
really?
Strictly, yes, it's painting and sculpture.
Hmm. Yeah. All right, so that's another area of the arts that you're involved in. What do you think that the new administration, the Clinton administration, will they, or do you think that we'll see more support or encouragement
of the
arts?
Yeah, that's interesting that you brought that up, because I'm very enthusiastic about this new administration. I think that it's very exciting, a lot of things happening, and we certainly needed to kind of kickstart ourselves as far as our thinking was concerned, except I have not heard word one about what's happening with the arts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether they're afraid to bring it up, although I understand that all the anything that was happening has been renewed.
Well, now, do you happen to know the chronology of arts funding, say in the past 20 years? I mean, was it more liberal under Carter, and were the purse strings tightened under Reagan, or has it been tighter as the years have gotten progressed?
Well, it's never been, the national funding has never been great. What has happened is this: you have the state funding. I mean, New Jersey is the golden state, you know. It's in the top echelon in the country as far as the devotion to the arts, and really, it's just incredible what is happening right around here. You know, you don't have to go to New York if you don't want to, or Philadelphia, or...
So you're saying it's not regulated totally on a national level?
No, a lot of it, the basis comes from the funding that the state gives its various arts councils and New Jersey. Well, look at your NJN, for instance, you know, your own news supplier here. They have a program called State of the Arts, which I think did an awful lot to help the arts in New Jersey. And it's just so much excitement about
that. So maybe that we really shouldn't really worry. I just know that, you know, the new president surrounds himself with artists. No,
yeah.
he has many artists and friends, you know, and is, I guess, inclined toward the arts, or music at least. So... You know, you might wonder whether or not...
We'll have Elvis imitation contests, and that's it. I think that they're going to get around to it. I think that they're, you know, there's so much pressure.
Well, what would we need from a national level if...
Well, one of the things that I think really got it started on a national level was the support of the Kennedys. I don't know if people would remember, but there were pictures of them, and they'd invite the great artists... performing artists of the world and poets to come in, and it was so encouraged. And now the Clinton inaugural was the first time we've seen a poet, I think, since that time, when that beautiful poem by Milo Angelou. Wasn't that marvelous? It was just a thrill. Yeah.
But, you know, in other countries, though, the performing arts are tied very closely to the government, such as in Russia or in Mexico, and there is this... real responsibility on the government's part to encourage the arts. And this is the reason I was asking you, since you're involved in the local scene.
Well, I've often thought it was strange. We're the only country in the world that does not have a Ministry of Culture. You know, in other words, at a cabinet level, there's not someone appointed. I think Americans are a little embarrassed by the arts. I don't know why. I hadn't really thought of this. But
well, we don't have, I guess, a real long-term heritage either.
No, perhaps not, but I think it's a level of importance and attention being paid to it, and it's too bad. I think that there are a lot of states where the representatives would, you know, say, well, we don't need this, we need more something else. Their emphasis would be on something else.
So the arts then are sort
the
of
arts will
de-emphasize.
Suffer. Exactly, de-emphasize, that's just the right word. Whereas in New Jersey and in other states too, New York and California, Florida has a very good funding system too of the arts. But I think it would be wonderful if it came from the White House, you know, when it's like the principal of the school sets the tone. And I think that with the Carter administration and the subsequent administrations, it was downplayed.
Mm-hmm.
And
Now let's tie this all together. If there were, say, more support from the national level, how would that affect the community theaters all the way down to the bottom?
Well, the community theaters would, now a theater like Town and Country Players, which that is technically a community theater,
mm-hmm.
They don't apply for grants, I don't believe. They might be encouraged to do that if they had more funding available.
Mm-hmm.
But
they can exist without really whatever.
Yeah, they don't pay any salaries, and whatever they take in at the door, I think more than pays for their expenses. I'm thinking this is the situation now. I don't know that particular
mm-hmm.
organization anymore. But at one time, we managed. Somehow we managed. Sold a lot of coffee and stuff. That way. But the theaters such as Passage and the dance companies and something like the Center for Performing Arts, which is starting, that is where they apply for nonprofit status, and then they in turn can apply for funding. They would be greatly affected by it. There would be a lot more money available.
Mm-hmm.
I think too that there might even be things done like more excellence for children. I love to see kids exposed to really good music and good theater and good dance, and not just plunked in front of a TV set. And
well, now is that part of the I attend public school. I don't know, but in my schools, we always had a theater production every year. Is theater part of a curriculum in a public school or environment?
It's very casual. Some it is and some it isn't. A lot depends on the principal and the school district. And
there is something that possibly at the mm-hmm. national level where there's the directive to pursue the arts, then it would become more of a curriculum in school.
Yeah. And I mean, I know I don't want to sound too religious about this, but I am, this is my religion, I think. I think that people need creative expression so desperately mm-hmm. that the world would be a much better place if everyone, we're all creative in some way. I said I was an appreciator. Well, that's sort of being creative, kind of. But there are people who also have more talent than I, I would wish that every person could have exposure to the arts and to being creative, so that it would be so harmonious. And I mean, I know as I maybe I'm Pollyanna here.
Well,
but,
no, this is
but,
your arts activism coming out.
Yes, it is. I really do feel
that's
very
wonderfully expressed, though, because anybody, as you say, they need to have some kind of creative outlet, no matter what it is,
sure.
Even if it's whittling or sewing or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're listening to Focus here on WDVR, 89.7 FM in Delaware Township, New Jersey. My guest this evening is Joan Stack, and we are speaking with her about her involvement in local theater, and we're going to come back and speak with her a little bit more right after these few words. And welcome back to Focus. I'm Frederica Layton, and we are speaking with Joan Stack. Joan had a radio show for 18 years in Doylestown, WBUX, and tell us about that, Joan.
Well, I'll tell you how it started. I used to cook a great deal. I always liked to be home when the children would come home from school. So I would start dinner at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And at the same time, Julia Child arrived on the scene. And so I found that all I had to do was to read Julia's book very carefully, every rubber spatula that she would mention and do it carefully, that I could be a pretty good cook. But a lot of people were afraid of her recipes because they took 3 and 4 pages just to read. So I had volunteered. Again, there's that good old volunteering. I volunteered to do cooking classes. A friend of mine was on the board of the YMCA in Central Bucks. It was trying to get started. And she asked me if I might do something. And so I said, yes, I would. I would teach a course in French cooking, which was fun. It really mm-hmm. sounds grander than it was. But it was very enjoyable, and it got me, I was very interested in food anyway, and it gave me confidence then when that period was over, a couple of years of encouragement too, because I always had a waiting list of people to come in the classes. Anyway, it encouraged me to go to the radio station and ask them if they might possibly do something about food that, where I could fit in, and of course again I volunteered to do it. And they said yes, I could. So I had a show called Thoughts for Food. Thoughts for Food was on for 5 minutes every day, And I would tape a program with a guest or guests. And it was, I was terrified, but it was fun and it gave me experience.
Well, it'd be kind of hard to cook on the air, you know.
Well, that's right. We talked about food rather than
visual,
recipe.
Right.
Anything, wine, beer, entertaining, cookbooks. It was amazing what you could do. One subject a week, you see, and then we'd run for 5 minutes. Well, then the station was bought by, among other people, James Michener, the writer, and Don Meredith, the football player. There's a wild combination. And a few other gentlemen, including Walter Conti, who has the marvelous restaurant in Doylestown, Conti Cross Keys Inn.
Mm-hmm.
So they asked me if I'd like to come to Conti's and do a program from there, which at that time was so old-fashioned, a format. I mean, everything was on tape. Nothing was ever live in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And especially not doing it from a location like that. So anyway, I said, sure. Now I got terrified all over again because I'm in the bar at Conti's. There are people all around. I've got to get sponsors for this show. I've got to do 5 different subjects a week, and it's going to be not 5 minutes, but 25. So anyway, I then put in another year and a half of terror while I did this, but I loved doing it. And it was a wonderful experience, an awful lot of work, as you can imagine.
Now, did you just talk with people related to food, or did you expand your horizons?
By that time I had to expand because I couldn't keep that up for a 25-minute program 5 days a week. No, I talked with all kinds of people. All kinds of subjects. Well, I love the entertainers, of course, and the playwrights and the performers and the artists and people working in the arts in general. I found dancers very hard to talk with, incidentally. They don't like to chat. You know, it's like, watch me do my creative thing here. Don't let's discuss it. So I learned a lot that way, too, just by sitting there. You know, I'd sit there, and then the guest would, and I would have lunch in this marvelous restaurant afterwards.
Now, did you ever interview the owner of the station, James Michener?
Oh, yes. He's a lovely man.
I was just wondering because, you know, the length of his novels, I mean, you might have been able to fill a whole week with
yes.
his chatting.
Well, yes.
I
love Jim Michener, and he is the most wonderful man. I found those books a little long, too. It's like taking a college course, but there were always lots of other things to talk about. He's great guy, yeah. And I interviewed many celebrated people, and of course many who weren't celebrated but were very interesting for the most part. I had a few people who didn't care to speak. Do you want me to tell you about
well,
you have your own war stories, I guess.
Yes, literally war stories.
Yeah.
Well, no, tell us.
Well, one was this man who was, I was told, an expert on genetics, and I knew nothing about genetics. Nobody much knew in those days about genetics. It was a brand new field, and I tried to get some information about it and couldn't. And at the last minute, I thought, well, this man's an expert. I'm not going to worry. We can ask a few questions, and we'll get through the program. Well, it turned out that the woman who had arranged for him to come to the program, I think, had a little crush on him. He was adorable. He was really cute. And she told me he was an expert. He was not only not an expert, but he was terrified.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I knew nothing about genetics, and we have 25 minutes to do this. So I found myself naming the crowned heads of Europe. I knew that Queen Victoria's grandchildren had a genetic disease. That was all I knew about. And I'm naming them very slowly, like Tsar Nicholas. Tsar Nicholas the second. I believe he was the second.
Oh, my goodness. For 25 minutes, right?
A friend of mine said she had to pull the car over to the side of the road because she said she was going to crack up her car. And she was...
It was too funny.
Oh, it was.
Now, you moved on from radio, or not moved on from, but you also got involved in American Women in Radio and Television and became president of the Philadelphia chapter.
Yes, that has been very interesting.
That's another volunteer work.
Another
area?
Volunteer, professional volunteer job at that point.
And president of it also.
And, yeah, and president.
And you were there what years?
Well, I've been a member, actually, since in 1977. I joined when I first began in radio. 76, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
But that's very interesting, especially when you go to the conventions, because you see these, you know, big, big, big time celebs, and you realize you're part of the same business. It's very heady, very exciting.
Now, as the president of the Philadelphia chapter, do you have any highlights from that?
Well, I suppose the chapter highlight was when Mrs. Bush came, Barbara Bush came, and we gave her an award for her work in literacy. That was very exciting. I mean, just to dealing with the Secret Service was an education in itself, and it was you're right up there, and right on the cutting edge, as they say,
mm-hmm.
With the First Lady, which is extremely popular, and we were able to sell tons of tickets to our annual luncheon
mm-hmm.
because of the draw that she was, and it was quite a coup just to get her to come.
Now, you arranged that, though.
No, I can't take credit for that one, Frederica. No.
You just pulled some strings?
I signed the letters that other people... No, people knew that she was very keen on literacy. And, you know, when you ask those people from the White House, a lot is on what's on their agenda. In other
mm-hmm.
words, if the White House wanted to place her in Philadelphia in March in 1991 for a public appearance, then it was a go. And otherwise, you would just get a letter thanking you very much, but, you know, Mrs. Bush is unable to come, or, you know, I don't know what they'd say.
So
someone who was the also on the board of AWRT knew someone who connected to her staff, and that's how it got started. And sure enough, they decided that it was going to be good for her to be seen in Philadelphia, so that's how we got her.
Now, let me ask kind of a personal question. How do you keep... get the energy to keep involved in all the different things that you're doing with the local arts?
I sleep late. I suppose. Well, you know what? I think it's like anything else. When you love something, the energy comes.
Mm-hmm. And you just like love.
I love to be involved. I do. I love the people who are creative people. You know, I really meant that when I said these are our treasures, and there should be more and more people who are given this opportunity to
mm-hmm.
express themselves creatively, and
if they're there, you'll help them.
I will. that's a promise. You heard it on the radio.
Do you have any goals on your horizon?
Well, I'm hoping to go back to Ireland. I've been doing some writing for newspapers too, in addition to my work as a publicist, and I'm hoping to get an assignment to go back. I'll keep my fingers crossed on this one. It's still in the works, to go back to Ireland, to the theater festival in Dublin. I've been there twice. I've been to Ireland many times, but I've been twice as a reporter at the theater festival, and that is a blast. I mean, that's running to the theater three times a day, going to the festival at night, which is absolutely crazy because the actors all come, and all the people connected with the performances come, the critics, and there. The last time I was in Dublin, there were 7 daily papers, if you can imagine, 7.
Wow.
And yes, they're very literate people, and the critics would go and write their reviews, and then they'd rush back to the party, and some of them would be terrible reviews. We'd find out the next day, but they went to the party anyway, you know. So that's such a great time. I'm hoping to do that again. That would be around the 1st of October.
Hmm. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and speaking about your experiences here on Focus. And, you know, thank you for coming, and hope you come back again.
Thank you, Frederica. I loved it. It was great. Good luck to you.
You've been listening to Joan Stack here on WDVR with Focus. And I'm Frederica Layton. Up next is Mark Snyder and Tuesday Night Classic. And I'll be back next week. Good night.